Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. We hope you are having a lovely day. My name is Nick Wyatt, and I am the Growth Marketing Executive here at Charity Digital, and I shall be your host for today's podcast. It is June the 17th, 2022, and we are recording this, and it's around 30 degrees in the UK right now. So naturally, everybody is talking about how hot it is. So we pre-apologize if any of us sound a little exhausted or faint as we do this. We are clearly not really used to these kinds of temperatures. So, marketing for charities 101. Can we really make it that simple? Long gone are the days when all you needed to do was shake a bell outside of Tesco's on a sunny afternoon. Now we have social media, email campaigns, online advertisement, and so on. It can get a little overwhelming. Marketing is something that every charity, regardless of shape and size, depends upon. The benefits of effective marketing are huge. But charities need to embrace the right marketing channels rather than attempting to do everything. Not everybody can be a Swiss Army knife of marketing, and they don't have to be. It's better to excel in key areas than spread yourself too thinly across them all. So that's what we want to discuss today. So let's start at the top. Talk about what charities need to know about marketing, the things we should all be aware of, and the core elements that charities need to focus on. Let's dive headfirst in perfecting websites, building your blog, smashing social media, and sending brilliant emails, and so much more. By the end of this podcast, we will all be marketing masters. I'm joined by a lovely panel today with the wonderful Laura Stanley and the sometimes wonderful Johan Mark Jones. Hello to you both. How are we doing today?
Hiya. I'm well. And you?
Hot.
Yeah, hot. Yeah. As I mentioned, it is 30 degrees. So naturally, we're going to sound a little bit faint every now and then. But yes, good. So we are all recording from home, by the way. So there might be some internet issues as we go along, but hopefully everything should be perfect. So let's start here, team. Big question, big talk right now, right here. What do charities need to know about marketing?
Marketing is essential. I mean, I think charities do it whether they know it or not. You don't have to have a dedicated marketing team or, you know, a big marketing team. It can be one person or it can be just a side part of your job. You know, if you're speaking to someone at an event or you're networking in any way, that's kind of a form of marketing, while not like specified in that sense. So I think the benefits of that are pretty self-explanatory, really. If more people sort of come to know your charity, come to know your cause, then that boosts awareness. Awareness leads to more volunteers. It leads to increased funds because obviously people will want to donate. And I think the important thing for charity marketing is that charities are actually the field of charities. There's 170,000 charities operating in England and Wales as of March 2022. If you want people to donate to your cause, you have to tell them what your cause is and you have to stand out in a pretty crowded field. That's what marketing is. And I guess the key to marketing 101 isn't how to master all these different channels, how to become an expert, because it's just simply impossible, particularly for smaller charities, but even big charities don't do well in every single way. It's about finding the ones that work best for your cause, the ones that are most appropriate for your cause, and also the ones that you have the expertise to market, sort of thing. So if, you know, the example I'd always use was if someone's good at video, if you had a videographer in your team, use them, you know, and use them to create videos to give introductions to your cause, and use TikTok if you're using socials, or YouTube if you're using socials. So it's all about finding A, what your capabilities are, and B, what your cause is and what sort of fits in closely with that. So I'd say that's the key. And then I hope this podcast, I think, will broadly be a discussion about the ones that you could use, the channels you could use. I think that's broadly what I'd say 101 is. The first rule of marketing is to play to your strengths, essentially.
Yeah, no, I mean, just to add on that, I guess 101 of today's marketing also definitely is, and you touched on this, is that's not just about reaching audiences, it's about standing out now. Because mm-hmm. as you mentioned, there are so many charities that it's not about reaching people is actually sometimes in the modern era quite easy, but it's also about really connecting and then making your cause known against others, because everybody's got, with so many charities, it's hard for people to choose who to donate to. So yeah, it's a little bit of both nowadays. But yeah, Laura, anything you wanted to throw in there? I know we've basically stolen everything from you though.
Yeah, I think you guys have covered it, to be honest. But yeah, I think that it's just about, yeah, I was just going to repeat your very good point there, Nick, that it's just about standing out, I think, and making sure that if you're trying to target a certain audience, that you're in the right place for it. So, you know, TikTok probably isn't going to do well with older adults or aging millennials like myself, but it'll be great for younger audiences who care about, you know, and the causes they care about. So yeah, just play to your strengths, but also think about what your audience want and where your audience are hanging out, because you don't want to be shouting to an empty room.
Where are they digitally hanging out? That's the actual marketing term, I believe. So
I think the term is vibing. Where are they vibing?
Yeah. Where are they vibing? That is it. If you get a marketing 101 textbook, it will say that.
Yeah.
Carry on, sorry, Ewan.
Sorry, I was going to say, and I think when we say playing to your strengths, that's not like a buzzword. I think you should literally do that. Like, literally playing to your strengths, this is about sort of defining your strategy. So think a lot about what you're going to do and where you need to improve before you go ahead and just sort of go for it. Like, I think the one thing I sort of learned being in a marketing team is that it's better to understand what you should be doing before you start doing it, and don't just go headfirst into it. So for example, come up with some criteria, come up with some goals. There's goal setting strategies, which we mentioned quite a lot, which is SMART criteria or FAST criteria, smarter, clear, hard, wise, all these other acronyms that basically give you a foundation with which you can build. And then run them through the five W's, of which are typically known to journalists, which is the who, what, where, when, why, and just ensure that you have that really, really sort of finessed idea of what you're going to do, and give it deadlines, give it timing, and really like get it targeted. So it is about having concrete plans that you can use to strategize. And equally, it's about evolving those plans. I think one big mistake charities make often, and businesses make, and organizations and individuals make, is you have plans and then you don't revise them. You're like, I have a plan. And then, you know, 6 months later, you're like, it's the same plan, even though you have loads of new information that should inform that plan, your successes, your failures, and so on and so forth. So use your experience to evolve that plan, evolve that strategy, evolve your goals as you go. And for example, if you're doing, like Laura said, if you're reaching a particular demographic and you decide TikTok will reach that millennial demographic or even Gen Z or whatever, and it doesn't happen, then you revise. And if you, do you see what I mean? It's about successes and failures.
Trial and error is the key thing, isn't it?
Yeah, agreed. I also think there's like looking at what others are doing as well. So don't try and be, you know, like benchmarking against your own success is all well and good, but try and look at what others are doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. I think there's a big community out there, basically, of people who are learning the same things you are. And for example, there's loads of stuff I found online about learning how to like beat the Instagram algorithms. Occasionally I see influencers that I follow are being like, please engage because the algorithms change and stuff like that. I just feel like everyone is learning, so just don't be too insular with your marketing plan either. Look outside for a bit and, you know, talk to people, get on those Facebook groups. Why couldn't I think of the word then?
To be fair, Facebook is a word that people don't say very often, so it's fine that you couldn't find it. You're so right, because marketing is a game of plagiarism at the end of the day, and that we can steal each other's techniques all the time. I know that we've literally seen people copy our emails in the past. But I just bring back, I guess, a little bit to what I said at the introduction and what Ewan's pointing out, that yeah, I think it's one of the things when I've spoken to charities a lot, because I've done a few had a few field conversations with people during some of the webinars I've done, is the sort of the spreading yourself too thinly. I think people look at it as like a tick box of marketing activities, rather than being actually like, right, where, which ones are going to work best and which ones aren't. But inside of that as well, I think something charities need to think about is that within those tick boxes there are other elements that you need to also, once again, don't spread yourself too thinly. I know that I've spoken about social media marketing so many times to so many charities, where I say, you know, don't just go, oh, I'm going to do social media marketing, then immediately assume that you have to use every single platform. Sometimes it's better to use two or three that you think you're going to find your audience in, and really focus in on those. And I think that goes for every single marketing channel, that you can select a channel, but then once within that channel, you also choose your key strengths within that. It could be that you're really good at direct emailing, or you're really good at newsletters. And if you can't do one without the other or something, and if you're spreading yourself too thinly within those channels, don't, you know, once again, always narrow things down to your strengths. And then that comes back to what Ewan said, which is, once again, keep revising what you're doing, and keep looking at your strategy, and keep making everything better. Learn from all your data you get, and learn from your mistakes and your failures, because that's how you make all your marketing better. So it's ticking the right boxes, not all the boxes. That's key.
Oh, that was beautifully put.
I think in terms of actually picking the channels, which is, you know, where this conversation will go, is like, the immediate thing to do. You do have to, with digital marketing particularly, you have to start off with a hub, something that you can refer back to essentially.
Yeah.
And so I think the website's probably the best place to chat about, because that's where if you've got email marketing, it's coming back to that. If you've got social media, you're linking through to that. If you've got events, they may well be advertised or even held on that platform on your site. So I think the first thing to cover there is to make your site mobile friendly and to ensure you pick the right platform that allows that. And the reason is, like, we're looking at some stats recently, which has more than 50% of website traffic is now through, you know, mobile. So, you know, so one big thing, small charities particularly, a problem they have is they don't often factor that in. They definitely don't have a platform that allows them to constantly check, because it's not just, oh no, this website looks good, this web page looks good on mobile. If you start digging deeper, other web pages, font can be problematic, and you basically have your homepage looks fine, but other pages don't look okay, and there's a problem there. So one thing we suggest is responsive design, and just ensure that your platform has that. That means that the elements of your web page are going to move around and look relatively pretty on your mobile, and that's basically just something you definitely need to have. And then from there, it's about making your website as sort of attractive and nice as possible, which I think is probably about producing the right content, right information, and getting that all on there. And content, I mean, me and Laura could speak all day because that is our speciality. So I think I don't know, Laura, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, so are we going to content, or can I, like, or?
Yeah, add to anything. Sorry, I'm just... Anything.
Because Ewan's got a little ahead of himself. This is why I said he was sometimes wonderful. We're now focusing basically on the core elements of charity marketing, and yeah. Ewan kicked us off with the website and sites. But yeah, Laura, if you want to follow on content, because that's guy you guys field in your world, and then
I think it's very closely related to the website, isn't it? I think that you know, it's your first impression, the world's first impression of you. So you want to think about, like, what people want to know when they visit you. So is it your impact immediately? Like, so lots, I mean, I'm sure lots of you have seen it, stats on the homepage where it says how many services you've delivered, how many people you've helped, in how many countries you're helping, and stuff like that. But also, maybe it's if it's sort of a personal charity, if it's in someone's name, for example, maybe it's having that the story first, you know, front and center about why the charity exists and all that. Or maybe it's both. But I think it's just thinking about what people want to know for when they first visit you. And also, make sure that donating button's really big. Make sure it's easy to navigate. And yeah, that's gone off content and back onto website. Sorry, I lost myself then. But yeah, just content, right-wise, I think you just need to plan really efficiently to make sure that you can bring stuff out as and when you want to.
Yeah.
And so, because I think posting something and then not being able to post something 3 weeks later is not going to help you any at all.
Yeah.
You need a bank of content, really.
I think it's the thing with content is, I mean, I'm not as an expert as you guys, but I think in terms of other marketing channels, is something, it's a marriage between two things, essentially, especially with your website, which is what you want to do versus what your audience wants from you.
Exactly.
It's finding that equilibrium between the two is so key. And then obviously you can move into the other aspects that I'm sure Ewan's will take us into in a minute about like SEO and such, because that's like the third element you pull into it, but you start at the top, really, which is what you want to achieve versus what your audience want, and then you go on from there and such. So yeah, and that's when you add in, as I mentioned. Ewan,
I was going to say what Laura said about being, you know, you have to have consistent content, because people will return to your site, see nothing new, and leave, and they won't return again. It's that blunt, really. And the world of the online world, as we all know, is a blunt place. It's somewhere where people are unforgiving. One way to plan is to just create a content calendar, which will allow you to have that sort of forward looking, sort of knowing what's coming up, reacting as well, because it gives you the opportunity to sort of see, you know, days of the year in advance, so you can sort of engage with those. But it also just gives you a rhythm, and that doesn't have to be, I mean, for us, we go for like 2 to 3 articles a day, but that can be one twice a week, that if that's the sort of size and the capacity that you have. And then once you have that commissioning, I think then it comes about tone of voice, making sure you're consistent throughout all your pieces. That just means editing and writing in a consistent way, using perhaps a formal tone of voice if you've got quite a serious subject matter, if your cause is quite serious. But there are causes, obviously, that aren't as serious and can have a sort of, what I mean by that is tonally, you can take a slightly more lighthearted approach. I think from there, House Style is a good one, which gives you rules for formatting, rules for writing, rules for imagery as well, which I think is absolutely essential, because we actually only just recently had a sort of a revelation that our imagery isn't actually consistent. Everything else on our site was quite consistent, but we'd have some with people in it, some with objects, some that were just completely sort of conceptual, depending on who picked what and what people liked. So we just sort of went for a minimalist approach and decided on vibrant colors. And if you go on our website, our homepage, you'll see what we did. Loads of places to get free imagery, loads of places to pay a little bit, and you can get really good imagery. So should definitely check that out. And then finally, I'd say once you've got all that down, then you can start thinking about SEO. And I mean, SEO is far too big to go into any detail here, but there are broad rules that you can have, which are optimizing the use of keywords, engaging in keyword research, writing high quality and readable and shareable and linkable content, using good links like reputable websites, not just any place you found online, because Google reacts poorly to that. Improving load times, which is a lot more complex, but you'll have to do your own research there, because I don't really know how to do that. Finally, like I said earlier, mobile friendly. Google's algorithms actually prioritize websites that are responsive to mobiles. So there's loads of places to go and research this, like, online. And honestly, SEO is one of these things where I think people find it conceptually quite frightening, but it's really not. You can get into it after just a little bit of research, and it can become maybe not fun, but certainly not as like sort of horrific as some people think.
Yeah, you're right. I know that we've seen it with SEO and such like that. It's quite a frustrating game, isn't it? Because you can put all this time and effort, as you have many times, and then 3 months later, you reap the rewards, and you almost don't care by that point, you know?
It is a slow burning reward, you know, like you have to wait. But then on the plus side, you know, there's sometimes when I think, oh, this won't do that well, and it really does. So it has its rewards, and it also has its, like, I mean, there's certain ones that I'm like, this is gonna do really well. It's gonna rank really well. I've spent a lot of time on it. I've got the information there. I've really written it sort of perfectly, or, you know, close. But sorry, that sounds really arrogant. But then it just doesn't rank, and that can be quite frustrating. But again, you can always revise and try and figure out what went wrong. It's a bit of a game in that sense, which is, it can be a bit fun. I'm really reluctant to say fun, because it's not fun, but it's
marketing
close.
Is fun.
Marketing is fun. Yeah. Well, I guess so far we've kind of started the fundamentals, really the real fundamentals of marketing, which is like website content and then adding in SEO, because we haven't really done any outreach in any of this. I mean, you could technically consider SEO as a little bit of a way of doing that. But there's other things that we should probably touch on, like social media and email marketing, because I feel like they're the two first places that are the easiest for people to start. I mean, I'll touch on social media because it's a world that I've been living in for the last 4 years, but I think it's a pretty easy place to start also because it's basically completely free and that you can set up all your profiles in there. But as I mentioned before, I think the key thing that I say about social media constantly, is, like I've said before about picking the right areas to go, is don't spread yourself too thinly on social media, because I see so many people do this and then they're starting their outreach on social media and it's not really working because they're posting one thing on all their channels that's exactly the same, or it's that they're just not doing enough on each panel, because each channel is massively different. They have their strengths and weaknesses. And I think we have other podcasts which go into really deep with me, going into quite deep detail about the different ones and their strengths and weaknesses, which you can find on our website, I'm sure. But yeah, to do a quick overview of that, I think the key thing is really, as we've sort of braced on before, is the finding the one where your audience is at vibing. That was the expression we used, wasn't it?
Yeah,
vibing. Excellent. And then sort of focusing on those platforms, because I know that I've worked at other jobs where Instagram was the key player, and Twitter is one of our key players here in comparison and such. And it's just really finding your audience and then focusing your time on that and learning the strengths of those platforms and learning how to use them properly, because sometimes posting the exact same content across the board isn't brilliant and people will expect different things from different platforms. So it's about learning each one. And a bit like SEO, really, as you mentioned, Ewan, that you don't reap the rewards very quickly on social media. And I know that I've done a presentation before about it, and someone very grumpily told me that they'd never seen any success with it after telling me that they'd basically done it for about a few weeks, saw no no gain. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really work like that. It's something you build up. You also have to build a fund, a bit like the website, before you accept people to come flooding in through the doors. You need to kind of build the foundations of what each profile is before you start seeing some sort of engagement on those channels. So it takes time. And it, once again, trial and error. But yeah, I guess so, to summarize what I all just said, it's about picking the right channels for you, making sure that you stick with it, trial and error to make it better, and use the strengths of each channel. But then also coming back to that thing I said before about the website, about the equilibrium between the tone of voice that you want to use and the, what you want to say versus what your audience want. I think with social media, you have a third thing there, which is it, what works on that platform, for example. So, you know, LinkedIn is quite a serious platform. So if you're the silliest charity in the world, it might not be a brilliant place to put, but if you're quite, you know, stern and your audience matches that, but then it doesn't match with, say, Instagram, which is quite a relaxed platform. Once again, you know, it's marrying those three things to be the perfect place to be posting your content.
And I think everyone should sort of work out the rules of each platform. If you're going to focus on, I mean, I would say small charities maybe focus on two social media forms, maybe more. Really work it out. And I mean, read the rules, like read the terms and conditions if you have the stomach for it. But then think about the rules, the unwritten rules that you have, how many posts you should do per day, the best times to post, should you use GIFs? And that goes back to Nick's point on tone of voice and what your users would expect, that's also just, you know, the nature of your cause. Should you include tagging and hashtags and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. So work out your unwritten rules and again, adapt those, because Nick, I know you know this, but you know, I think sometimes when people post, if they're not getting engagement, they sort of go, huh, and they continue sort of doing the same thing, you know, whereas actually you do have to adapt. You sort of have to ask yourself the questions of, are we posting too much? Are we posting too little? Are we using GIFs and that's not getting a nice response because maybe people think it's not, maybe people just dislike GIFs or, you know, stuff like that. So just have unwritten rules and adapt them as you go based on success and failure. Again, I know we've used that quite a lot now, but
yeah, I think it comes back to that, creating a social media strategy really, which is, you know, putting together exactly what you want to do on those platforms and then establishing how you want to use them. And then, as you just said, adapting or revising that strategy as you go along to make the most of each ones. And so what you said again, you know, the use of GIFs and stuff like that, videos and images on certain platforms don't so work, but then trial and error is the key thing on social media, that because some things really work on one platform but might not work for your audience, but you find that's the key thing that does. And and I think that's quite fun, to be honest, really trying to nail down what works and what doesn't work by testing lots of different things is, you know, is part of the fun of the platform. But I can understand why that also is very frustrating. And I think, yeah, once again, that goes to a good social media strategy. So you map out exactly what you want to do and then kind of go back to that so you can compare notes can be extremely useful.
Yeah, right. So the tactics could differ, but like your message should always remain consistent. Would that be a fair?
I don't know, actually. No, now that you said it out loud, I disagree with you. I'm saying, no, yeah, keeping the message clear across the board. And so everything's succinct, even if you do make changes across your social media channels. But it's very clear who is talking the whole time, no matter what channel you're on.
Yeah,
I think this is true across your website. It should be across your comms. Mm. I mean, the tone of voice is something I'm quite like, you know, stern on, because I think it's a big mistake that people make, and I notice it. Like, I don't know if everyone else does, but if I see someone who responds to me in a certain way on socials or appeals in a certain way on socials, then their email differs. I find it frustrating, and I want complete consistency in terms of branding, in terms of tone of voice, in terms of imagery and everything like that. And I think that doesn't just apply for socials. Your social should mimic the tone of voice that you have in your emails, which should mimic the tone of voice you use in your website, and so on and so forth. So make it all consistent. And that's not that hard to achieve, because you have a core house style, a core tone of voice set up. Obviously, it deviates slightly. No one's going to have a perfect tone of voice, nor would you want to. But you can have these general rules, which everyone in the organization should basically attempt to follow, and that will just create a consistency, and it will do you wonders in every way for your marketing.
It builds trust, doesn't it? Because it's a way of personalizing yourself, I think, or personalizing your charity. So, you know, if people find that you're acting differently on all these different platforms, or, you know, in all these different communications they have, it sort of makes it feel a little bit less, I don't know, trustworthy.
It's weird. Yeah, it is strange. I've definitely seen a few of those where people almost dive so headfirst into what makes a platform its own that when you read across the board, it's a bit weird. I've seen a few charities that are really quite stern and serious on LinkedIn, and then quite relaxed on Twitter to the point where you almost would feel like it was a totally different organization. Mm. And I know that you do have to adapt for those different audiences on those two different platforms, but I know that when I've done socials, I try to keep it succinct, and there's different things on each platform which you can keep your tone of voice very clear, but you focus their strengths. For example, on Twitter, I might make a joke, while on LinkedIn, I might put a fact or figure, but the post and the voice remains more or less the same. Mm. And then, you know, I always find that Facebook's somewhere in between the two, really. And then, you know, so on with all the other different platforms. But I totally agree with that. And I think that's a really good point, because if you're sounding like one person and then another somewhere else, it's off-putting.
Yeah. I think your point was great as well, because that is important, because we would also recommend that people tailor their content for the sites, the social media platforms, but you can remain consistent while tailoring your voice. Mm. You know, there's a middle ground there. You can go to LinkedIn and still have that friendly, approachable tone of voice that you have on LinkedIn with facts and figures and the way you deliver it. And you can have the same if you're having a joke on Twitter. It's about finding a middle ground. They're not ever going to be exactly the same, and that's not what you'd want. But just a consistent tone of voice, I think, goes a long way.
Yeah. The fact that we ourselves would deliver ourselves differently on different social media platforms while still remaining ourselves.
And in life as well.
And in life, yes.
Yeah. You're not going to be taught like this in a job interview.
Yes. I think one thing we have to talk about, because it's another of the key ones that I think people can jump into very quickly, is email marketing. Mm. It's something that we do a lot of, and I've always done a lot of in my short but beautiful marketing career. Email marketing has played a key part in that, and I think it's one of those things that sometimes can be massively overdone, and sometimes it's, you know, people get scared to send out emails and such. But I think the first thing you really need to talk about before we get into that is really just like picking the right platform to use for your email marketing. It may be the case of the website you use has in marketing email marketing platforms you can use. You know, that there's lots of people who use I've forgotten the key one. It was just on my tongue.
MailChimp.
I knew it had something with a monkey in it. If I were starting email marketing tomorrow for the first time ever, that's where I'd probably look, because I know so many people do start there. And I think it's a great place to start, because it's quite simple.
Yeah, it is. It is. So that was in my first job that I was using it. So it wasn't very intuitive. I didn't really know what I was doing. But it's very easy to build your templates. It has loads of different things on there. It's very, whatever you need, I think they've got a template for you to be able to send something out there. You can send it, like, it's easy to upload your audience into it, and also it's really good to see your results afterwards. So I feel like it's a great place to start. I think it's it sort of does everything you need to do at the start of your email marketing journey, I would say.
Yeah, obviously we also have to shamelessly plug that you can get .digital at Charity Digital, which we have all used, and is a rather excellent platform, if I say so myself.
And we get excellent support, don't you?
Excellent support from us, yes. The lovely Liz here will help you with everything you need. Yeah. But I know it sounds like a shameless plug, but I've actually used it, and it's one of the best email platforms I've ever used. I found it to be a brilliant middle ground between kind of being supportive and also giving you some more in-depth tools. Which were great, because I used to use basically like coding HTML emails, and they were horrible. And then I've used a few other different small platforms, and I found that one to be one of the best. And we use in-house a lot now too. But yeah, it's a really great option for other people to look at. But I think then that once you've kind of clicked a platform, we need to discuss the idea of how you use your emails. And it's something I mentioned earlier, I think, about the self is, once again, don't spread your cares too thinly by doing every type of email under the sun. It could be that a simple newsletter achieves everything you want to achieve. It could be direct mail about certain topics or certain things what you need to do. I guess it really goes back to whatever your charity is trying to achieve, really, and whatever your goal is. I'm sure there'll be a type of email that suits that. It could be just giving an update about what's going on in your charity weekly, monthly basis, whatever you feel is most appropriate. But then we're going to come back to that trial and error. It's going to happen here again, because, you know, it might not work immediately. You might need to grow yourself a bit of a email base, a contact list to contact. But
To jump in, I think that generally you start by using the data you have. You know, that's the first step in emails. Like, people don't often look around the data they have on signups and memberships and other things they can find in their website. obviously look at GDPR, because that can be, you need to make sure you have the adequate consent and everything like that. And then I'd say a big broad rule is don't email everyone everything. That should be obvious to anyone who's ever received emails, because it just annoys people. It puts them off and they're not going to engage with you. So just don't think that quantity is in any way preferable to quality. So find the right people and target those people and put them into, you know, like sort of targeted groups of people who have an actual legitimate interest in what you're selling. Then use that information to give them personal, preferably personal emails, or as personable as possible emails that would actually give them something they'll be interested in. And that's kind of how to do, I think, a broad overview of a quick way to do email marketing. Those are golden rules. But then of course, within the email, it's about how you word it. Use of media, whether you do, whether you don't. But a few simple rules for writing emails, I think, is avoiding too much clutter, too much information. And the golden rule, which you'll see if you Google this stuff, which I have, is skimmability. People do not want bulk paragraph texts telling them complex information about your charity that they can't engage with immediately. Make it simple, simplify, avoid clutter, and just give them the crux of what they need to know and what they want to know. And I think that's how a broad baseline of how you can successfully send an email. Sorry if that was too much.
I'm just glad you did your research on that. So and you looked it up on the internet.
The internet's never lies.
It is very true. It hasn't for a very long time. You're totally right in that use the internet, because there's lots of great articles about it. And I'm sure we do definitely have plenty of emails on how to really nail your email marketing. And I think the same point I'm going to make here with email marketing is similar to social media, is that if you go into it with an email marketing strategy in mind, mapping out, you know, what kind of emails you want to do, how you're going to do them, how you're going to target them. And then from there, keep revising it so that you're learning from all the things that work and don't work. We'll just keep on increasing the success of your emails. One thing I do want to almost counter what you said, Ewan, though, because I feel like this, especially because we're talking sort of 101 and the basics here, is if you don't have an email contact list that's big enough, maybe you don't have to separate everything out just yet. If you've got four people on your email list, you're not going to send them four separate emails. It could take you forever. But the goal should always be to get enough people that you can start getting the data on them to separate them out, to be sending people the relevant things that they want to hear from. But yeah, not to scare off charities who have small contact lists that they have to send out 10 different emails to the few hundred that they have on there initially. But like I said, create an email strategy. It'll really help you in making sure that you increase the success of your emails moving forward.
Oh, guys, my mind's overwhelmed with all your tips. They're very good.
I've got so many more, but I feel like we've probably covered the prime foundations of anything, unless there's anything anyone would like to add.
Oh, I was going to say something that our head of marketing says a lot, which is relates to your trial and error stuff, which is failing's okay as long as you're changing, right?
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this Charity Digital podcast. We hope you are able to take something away from it. Thank you so much, Ewan. Thank you so much, Laura, for joining us today. And we hope that you have a lovely day. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.